I want to give a shout out to today's sponsors of Vintage Homeschool Moms, Veritas Press. Today we have a very special show. We're going to talk about raising successful children.
This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Welcome to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Your host, Felice Gerwitz, is an author, a publisher, and your radio show host. She will encourage, educate, and inspire you with answers to your most pressing questions, from homeschool, marriage, parenting, and much more. Felice loves to equip moms to live a Christian life because every moment counts. Be sure to visit her website at mediaangels.com. And here's your host, Felice Gerwitz.
Hey, everyone, and welcome. This is Felice Gerwitz with another episode of Vintage Homeschool Moms. And today I'm excited to take you outside of the little world of Vintage Homeschool Moms into the world of Veritas Press. Today I have Marlon and Lori Detweiler on the line, and they are the founders of Veritas Press. So welcome.
Well, glad to be here.
We're glad
okay,
to be
well, good. I hear Lori there in the background. So, but I loved your catalog because I always knew that I didn't have to worry because you guys had done the legwork. So first of all, did you? Well, I see it's still available on your site, so I'm excited. So Veritas, I'm going to spell that for you guys, Veritas Press.com is where you can find more information about their site. But what led you to start Veritas?
We had an interesting thing happen when our oldest son was in first grade in Orlando that caused us to look at education very differently. And we were encouraged to read a book called Recovering the Lost Tools of Learning, read it, and said, that's what we want for our children. So we took the initiative to start a school, which turned into starting a curriculum business. And we have been serving the classical education community of schools and homeschools ever since. That was back in 1992. Veritas was started in really the 97-98 time frame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've homeschooled a little bit longer than you guys have, starting in 86. But I have been, delighted with the information that I find on your site and, of course, in your catalog. Why the name Veritas?
Veritas is a Latin word that means truth. And because Latin is a critical part of a classical and, I think, an excellent education, and because of what it means, and because it rolls off the tongue pretty well, we
mm-hmm.
thought it sounded
love
like
it.
A good idea.
I never, oh, gosh, when people ask me why I named my company Media Angels, it's the same thing. You know, the .com was available back in the day, so we bought it. there was nothing, other than it popped in my mind, which was a God thing, so that's wonderful. And I love that, that you have a Christian worldview as part of your curriculum. But if we have, a new homeschool mom and, they're looking at different methodologies of homeschooling, why do you like the classical approach other than some of the other approaches?
Sure. I was in, this is Lori. I'm an educator, and I was raised in a family of educators, so I've been around education a while. And when we finally read about classical education, it just clicked. It's the way God mm-hmm. wired children. And if you look historically at the way children were taught, some of the best times in education were society was the most literate, where children were able to think well, was during those times when classical education really was going on. And so we just believe it's the way God wires children. In grammar school, they love to memorize. It doesn't matter what it is, mm-hmm. eeny, meeny, miny, mo, or a mo, a, ma, a, ma, they can do it. And then as they get a little bit older going into the dialectic stage. Anybody who's been around, you know, junior high kids, they'll all tell you they're pert or argumentative. They love to argue. So why not teach them logic and teach them how to argue well? And then the rhetoric stage, those high school years where they suddenly become aware of what others think about them, and why don't we teach them how to speak well? And so it just made sense to us, and we've seen it work over the years.
Very good, very good. And I know that, you know, classical probably is one of the top tiers of homeschoolers and how they approach learning. And, you know, as I shared with you offline, you know, my daughter's a communication major, and I really attribute a lot of her skills to a lot of the books that we ordered from your catalog. So she really, really was good at the argumentation. She was great at it, as a matter of fact. To this day, she is. And let me just interject here. Guys, if you're listening and you want the show notes to today's episode, go to vintagehomeschoolmoms.com and look for Raising Successful Children, and you'll have the show notes there. So we're going to be talking a lot about that today, and, you know, it looks differently to different people. I mean, some people think that a successful child means that you didn't kill them by the time they left your home. Others might define success a little bit differently. So what does it mean to you?
Great question. The first thing, we're Christians, and the first thing mm-hmm. that I would say is that I want my children to have embrace the Christian faith, to love and serve the Lord Jesus Christ. And that is easily the most important thing to us in measuring success. Then I want them to be successful in their relationships with their wife. I happen to have four boys, so that's how I categorize that, but with their spouse maybe would be a better way to say it.
Right.
With their children, inculcating the Christian faith into them and enhancing it in their home. And then being a good citizen, a good neighbor. I like the idea of them being successful in the endeavors that they attempt. Our children are all very entrepreneurial, and so to be successful in the businesses that they're all involved in and do that is an important part of it. Financial independence is sometimes what people are driven to when they hear the word success, and that's a good thing, but it's not the most important thing. But all of those things make for successful children. And then maybe lastly, to have children that all of us enjoy being together. When people come to our house around the holidays, the kids make it a point to get home as much as they can. Two of our boys live here with us in Lancaster County, not with us, but in the same area. And mm-hmm. one lives in Naples, Florida. Another one lives in Santa Monica, California. But there are certain holidays that they will do everything that they can to be here. And we have some of the most wonderful family times. Even though they're very different and very diverse, we get together and we do things many times that none of us do otherwise. Like we might go shoot clay pigeons. We don't do that any other time except when we're together, because it's the kind of thing that we all enjoy doing together. And so success is built around a lot of different things. And all of them together can really make for a special extended family relationship.
That's wonderful. And yeah, my house is the hub of all of the family gatherings. And just for you homeschool moms out there, maybe you have younger kids, but one little sage piece of advice I will say is that if you open your house and even allow, you know, their mothers and father-in-laws to come, because I've done that with my daughter, it always ensures everybody's here for Christmas. So that has worked out really well in our family, and God has blessed us with the room. And as my mother would always say, if you have floor space, you have room. You just make it work. And, you know, and the other thing, as you were talking, I was thinking, aren't all homeschool children entrepreneurs? I mean, my kids were consistently through the years coming up with, you know, business ideas and business plans. But my favorite was they wanted me to implement them. I was thinking, no, God gave you this idea, but Mom, you should do this as part of your business. No, this is not my, you know, my job description here. But and I think as homeschoolers, one of the things that we allow our children to do, and I have harped on this, this is episode 200 and something now, but my listeners know, I've done entire episodes on giving your children time to think, because I really feel that that is one of the missing elements of education, that we sometimes cram it so full that we don't allow them time to explore their interests or their, because sometimes parents will say, well, my kids don't have any hobbies. And I'll say, have you given them time to think? And they look at me like, are you strange? But that's one of the things, you know, by allowing your children, right? And I'm sure you guys have both done that.
Oh, absolutely. That's a great observation. And we also have found it very helpful to encourage children in places of their interest, and have gone to great lengths mm-hmm. to do that. So that I call it, and I do a talk on this called Greasing the Skids. We're lubricating the direction in which they're interested to make it easier to go further, further up and further in to that interest.
I love it. I love that, that analogy. I just could see it. I could see it, Marlon. That's great. So let's talk about the early years of child development before we go to break. You know, I have a background in early childhood education, and it was back in the 70s. Some of you may not have even been born. Some of you were really young back then. But it was quite the time. You know, it was at the end of the 70s, but it was quite the time with, you know, open classrooms. I remember visiting a classroom where they decided to take the walls down. That didn't last very long because it was very noisy in there, and, you know, kids could not clue in when they were different ages and different levels that were going to be in this open environment. There was a lot of stuff out there like, you know, coloring with outlines. You mean just art? But there was an entire series that was, you know, that was called something like that, and you opened it and it was just blank pages, and they sold a ton of these. You know, like, why don't we think of things like this? But I know that, you know, you guys have some really great information to share with us about, you know, some things that parents can do to start developing tools for learning.
Sure. It's really fun for us now. We have three grandchildren and another one on the way, and I am very fortunate that I get to be with my grandchildren a lot, and it's very fun to learn from what you did with your own children, then see what your own children are doing with their children and get to be a part of that. And the big thing that I would say with in those really early years is letting children explore and providing them places to do that. So whether it's regularly for me, I'm taking them to art museums, science museums, we're going to, you know, see horses, and we do art projects, and I have them in my backyard, and we're down at the creek. And, you know, yesterday Marlon walked in the door, and I said, I honestly think I read 90 books today to these children. So we have piles and piles and piles of books around our house. After all the years of review copies, you can imagine I have books everywhere.
Right.
And, you know, we just sit and read, and then we were talking. Our oldest one has just turned 4, but, you know, we were looking at Van Gogh's Starry Night. And so we actually painted Van Gogh's Starry Night. And letting children explore at that age, I think, is so important.
R.C. Sproul is a friend, and I remember when we were in Orlando with him and taking the initiative to start a school there, he was there answering questions for people. And somebody said to him, how do you create this inquisitive nature in children and this wonder? And his answer was classic. He said, it's not our job to create it, and we don't need to. God's already given it to them. It's our job not to kill it.
Right. it's amazing because that is so true. A lot of times we don't give the children the ability to do that. Paintings, and I paint with my grandchildren too, so we have a lot of parallels. And I'm actually 30 minutes away from your son in Naples. I'm in Fort Myers, so we have a lot of
right.
He can come visit. He can come visit me anytime. He's close by. So when you go visit him, we'll have to, you know, go have coffee. So we'll get to meet you. But, you know, so many wonderful things. And also, you know, you hit on something with reading, and I want to have you share that before we go to break. We're at the rate we're going, we're never going to break because this is so good. But, you know, you talk about the importance of reading to preschoolers. Why is that so important, Lori?
Well, I think it's so important just to, you know, open their eyes up to what's out there, but also because if they, at a young age, if they hear language and they hear it roll off your tongue and they learn to sit and pay attention, it allows the study skills to develop in a small child. Having taught, you know, my background's education like yours, mine's actually special education, but you can always tell that kindergartner that comes in that mom and dad have read to, you know, over and over again because they have no problem sitting and attending. Even fidgety little boys that have been read to, it just makes a difference. And it helps them understand language. And most times, not always, but many times, children that are read to at a very young age become early readers. And if we want to develop a lifelong love of learning and reading, which is really important to us, they
right.
need to be read to at a very early age. So, and just last week, you know, one of my favorite things I got to do, I actually, our four-year-old granddaughter started reading, and it was just very, very fun to get to see her do that and start to sound out words. And, you know, it's just part of, it's so much a part of her life. It was so much a part of our boys' lives that it was just a normal, everyday occurrence.
And
so
she's,
cool.
Yeah, she just turned four. Kids can read at a much younger age. It's a matter of providing opportunity and tools that will do that.
Right. And I've had them read at all different age levels. My youngest read
Absolutely.
At four, the others not so much. But it was funny because my struggling reader, who graduated from college in 3 years, magnum cum laude, as I tell parents, don't stress it if they're not quite reading, but she would read to her dad without the book. And he would say to her, she could walk up and she'd go, "Oh, Daddy, I want to read you a book." And he'd say, "Okay." And they'd sit on the couch. And he'd look at her, and she had memorized it, you know. But it was hysterical, and I was thinking, okay, we need to kind of, because my background's also learning disabilities, Lori. I think we have a lot in common. We haven't met before, it's so hysterical. So, but we are going to take a really quick commercial break because I want you guys to hear something really exciting from Veritas. We'll be right back.
Teaching your child how to read is not easy. Either they want nothing to do with the book unless you are the one reading it, or bedtime tends to be an hour-long event because they want to read every other page. No matter which scenario you relate to, I have the answer to all your learning to read problems. Veritas, the leader in classical education materials and online homeschool classes, has created the most innovative and comprehensive reading app available, the Phonics Museum. Based upon the company's award-winning Phonics Museum curriculum, the app provides each child with a multi-sensory approach to reading with over 900 engaging games, activities, interactions, exercises, and memory songs. What makes this app so unique from other educational apps is the fact that it merges a classical, time-proven approach to learning with state-of-the-art technology and is focused on getting children to read and write as fast as possible. Your child will forget they are learning when they begin to follow the adventure of Percival, a boy knight, and fun-loving museum curator Miss Biddle as they explore the art in the Phonics Museum, learning letters, sounds, and how to read along the way. The interaction, theming, and charming characters provide a truly multi-sensory approach to reading that benefits every learning style. The app utilizes a classical education method that coincides with children's natural development, making it ideal for teaching children preschool to second grade. Children who walk through the entire Phonics Museum app will not only be able to read an age-appropriate book by themselves, but they will also develop a love of reading. So, what are you waiting for? Show your children how fun reading can be by downloading the Phonics app today. It is available now on all iOS platforms. For more information and a 14-day free trial, visit phonicsmuseum.com.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back. This has been a great episode with the founders of Veritas, Marlon and Lori Detweiler. And we are talking about a lot of things that really gear to raising successful children. And I've enjoyed this interview. I hope you have, too. It looks like we have a lot in common. But as we've been talking, we're going to shift to the grammar school ages and, you know, kids starting kindergarten and also, you know, kind of looking at, you know, maybe a child who's struggling a little bit and, you know, what we can do to help them.
Sure. One of the things that I think is really important is particularly if it's the first child that you're homeschooling, you know, we can all remember back to that. And for you and I that had a background in education and might have taught before, and for other moms that have done that, you kind of have a benchmark to where a young child should be. But if that's not in your wheelhouse, if you've never done that, it's a little bit more difficult, and it can be really unsettling. I agree with a statement you said, you know, when if you have a child that's not reading, you know, don't get too uptight about that. And that I tell people that all the time. My four boys all read at very different ages. But at the same time, so many times I see parents that because they don't know what those benchmarks are, they almost don't know what to shoot for. And so I would say, you know, look, get a hold of curriculum that you, you know, we obviously love Veritas Prex, but get a phonics program that you feel confident about and see where your child should be. The other thing is, I said, talk to your friends. See what their children are doing. It really helps you to see where they should be when you see children that are just a little bit older than yours. And if you think that they're falling behind, don't be afraid to ask questions. It should never be something you're embarrassed about, because there are all different kind of reasons that children might be falling behind. Some of it might be that, you know, you just need to find another way to get through to the child, or there could really be a learning disability, at which case, you know, you probably need to seek some outside help and find out what's going on. But ask questions of those around you.
Very good. That's very good advice and, you know, important, because I know that because of the way homeschooling is structured, and one of the reasons I love homeschooling, even if I had struggling learners, they weren't labeled. So they still were able to overcome, you know, because you can fix learning struggles. And that's something that we learned through some vision training, some brain training. I did it all. And so we were able to fix it. It took some time and it took some perseverance and there were some tears. But all of my children have grown up to be avid readers. And, you know, in fact, you know, you have an avid reader when they get in trouble for reading during school. Now, I'm sure that's never happened in your family. Is that right?
My wife never got in trouble as a child, except when she took a flashlight to bed with a book and under the covers would read.
Oh, same here, Lori. Same here.
What I would say, too, is, you know, it's really, I do a talk on this, and I think as homeschoolers, it's really important to set goals, because it's really easy to fall behind when you've got a sick baby, when you've got a doctor's appointment, when you've got music lessons. It's always manana. And So many times over the years, I have said to people, you need to set goals and you need to reach them on a daily basis, and definitely on a weekly basis, because a lot of the children that we see where mom might think they're struggling, it's really not that they're struggling, it's just that they didn't reach the goals they needed to for the year.
That's really good, and then they get really down on themselves and don't think they
exactly.
can homeschool. So
right.
that is extremely important. What is also important is to make sure that the education that they are getting is right for them. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Sure. Not every child learns the same. children come, you know, I say God makes each one of them different, you know, differently. Our first son was wired just like my husband, very, very mathematically inclined. He'd finished Calc 2 and linear algebra with differential equations before, I'm sorry, Calc 3, linear algebra, differential
okay.
equations before he had even graduated from high school. He was going to to Franklin and Marshall and taking those courses. And he just, you know, learning came very easily to him. And so, you know, he learned very differently than I have, you know, our third son was a theater major. And so, you know, he could quote you Shakespeare, but when it came to math, it just, you know, he could do it, but it didn't come as easily. And, you know, I had another child that struggled learning to read. And so finding what worked for that child. Now, I think mm-hmm. classical education, I'll just tell you, works for all children. I've seen it across the board. But it doesn't mean that you don't have to tweak it a little bit for each individual child. And that's the beauty of homeschooling, you know. The beauty of homeschooling
right.
is they don't all have to go at the same pace, and they don't all have to fit into the same mold. So when we write curriculum, we are trying to think about every kind of learner. Are they an auditory learner? Are they a kinesthetic learner, a hands-on learner? Are they a visual learner? We really try to provide and it probably came from my, you know, background in special ed. We tried to provide different angles to get to almost any child. And so that's just been very important and at the core of Veritas Press.
Which is wonderful. And you guys didn't start as early as I did. You know, that was a problem for me. It would have been nice to have you, you know. I know, right? Where were you? Oh, but, you know, there were a lot of trials and errors, and I had to unlearn some things from my educational background. And I ended up, that's why I felt like, you know, I had this gap of the two older ones, and then, you know, 12 years later, my third, fourth, and fifth child, where I could do some things differently, and they did have, you know, the Latin flashcards when they were really young. They did have, you know, the Greek and Hebrew roots. They did have, you know, a lot of things that I didn't think to do with the older ones.
You've got a really good point there. And it's something that we have actually been aware of for some time. And that is when we're homeschooling, we tend to teach our own children the way that we were taught. That's our default mm-hmm. way of doing things. And sometimes that's really good and sometimes that's not. But one of the things that we became aware of a book called The Seven Laws of Teaching, and it's from the 19th century, written by a guy named John Milton Gregory, and we actually give it away. If you come to our website, a window will pop up, you put in your email address, and we will email you an electronic
Wonderful.
Copy of this book. And it is such practical and sturdy advice for how to teach. It is a core to all of what we do when we train teachers, and it is really an essential read, and it's an easy read for homeschool families getting started with teaching, because it will really give them an enormous amount of very practical advice and save years of failure or difficulty from inexperience.
Wonderful. And that is Veritas, V-E-R-I-T-A-S, press.com. And very, very great. We'll even have that in the show notes, Marlon, because I think that's very important. So how can a child get all of the opportunities that they need? Are you sure homeschooling is enough? Have you been asked that question before?
Sure, lots. You know, it's interesting. I'm gonna go out on a limb here because I know not everybody's going to agree with this. Today in homeschooling, I believe things are a lot better for this generation coming up than they were for, say, even your children and my children. I'm an educator, and I feel like I'm pretty qualified to teach, but there is absolutely no way I could have taught calculus to my children. I'm a wonderful liberal arts teacher, but I still could not have taught the Great Books program the same way that some of the, you know, teachers that we have teach it. And the great thing about today is you don't have to do it all. You know, when many of us were digging this out of the trenches, as I call it, you know, we didn't have a lot of options. We had to figure out how to do it. And we did the best we could, and we found, you know, I used to find other moms that I had a friend I homeschooled with, and she was great at math and I was great at the humanities. And so we traded off, and she taught she taught my children those things that I wasn't as good at, and she taught those things. But today there's so many options. And so I would just encourage people to really know what your limitations are, and then look for other options if you can't do it yourself. But at the same time I'm saying that, you know, it's really important that you are what I call responsible for your child's education. So even if you're handing it off, I never encourage people just to, you know, we tell our parents in our online school this all the time, you know, you still need to be involved. You know, we're there to teach your children, but you need to be involved in this process also.
There are so many options now that it's really wonderful. And I really encourage those of you listening to head over to veritaspress.com and check that out. So if parents feel like their kids are not getting what they need out of education, like they're struggling or, you know, probably, and this is what happened to me, and you probably have had this situation before. I felt, you know, I always look at children and I don't look at them as, oh, they're just being bad. I always say to parents, usually if a child is acting out, there's a reason why. And I remember my children really balking at, you know, an unnamed curriculum that we were doing. And I found that it was not fitting their needs. And when I said, okay, we're going to set this book aside and go outdoors and do some of the things that are in this book, they blossomed. So what if a parent finds that they're not getting what they thought they were going to get from, you know, something that they've purchased or maybe a methodology that they're using?
I think the first question they need to ask themselves is why. You know, there's a particular math curriculum that's been out there for a very, very, very long time, and it's, in my opinion, one of the best math curriculums out there. And there are times when I have parents say to me, well, my child just doesn't like doing this every day. And so I say, you know, because it's so much repetition. And so I ask, you know, I generally ask them the question, well, you know, do you like washing dishes every day? And their answer, of course, is always no. And so I say, well, what makes you do it? And sometimes I think, we need to, and I agree with you about taking the kids outside and changing those things, but that's where I'm kind of going with this, is we need to have our children realize that some things you do just because you need to do them, but at the same time as a parent, what can you do to make it more fun? So for an example, you know, there are multiplication time tests in this curriculum, for instance, but a lot of kids just don't like that. Well, what's the purpose behind why they're doing it? The purpose, and that's what I tell parents, ask yourself the question, why are they doing this? Well, it's so they memorize their multiplication tables. Well, there are lots of ways you could do that. I used to take my boys outside on a, you know, with a ball, and because my boys were so close together, we had four, our oldest was not five when our fourth was born. So they were very, very close. And we would go outside and I'd have the four of them pass a basketball around doing their multiplication drills. Now, I was accomplishing the same thing by doing that. At the same time, they then had to come in and do this worksheet, you know, and they had to do it well. So, you know, I think that's important. I think the other thing that's really important is realizing that a curriculum, so many times I see parents that jump around curriculums, and that can constantly. So every year is a new and a different thing, trying to find the right thing. And what I would say to that is I think it's more important to figure out your child's learning styles and how they learn rather than just trying to switch curriculums. Because many times it's not the curriculum, it's how we're implementing the curriculum.
Very good. Well, you guys are big advocates of Latin at an early age. We are missing the boat without giving our children some early education. So explain that. I mean, you know, kids are struggling here with just doing school, and here you guys are saying, you know, Latin, you know, so explain.
Sure, absolutely. The first thing that we have to realize is we're not learning Latin instead of Spanish or German or French or something else. Latin, first and foremost, as far as we're concerned, is learned as a tool of leverage for mastering our own language.
Mm-hmm.
The learning of Latin will help us develop our expertise and mastery of English grammar, of English vocabulary, of idioms, of scientific language, and it becomes a tool of leverage for learning other modern foreign languages, particularly those that are based on Latin or are Romance, that is from Rome,
right.
Languages.
Right.
And this is not a new idea. This was around it in a very comprehensive way for a long time and really disappeared in the 20th century because education became far more pragmatic and training for a job rather than learning for becoming learned and ultimately a free man, being able to be free because of our learning. And so the mastery of our own language is one of the most significant things we can do as educated people, and Latin becomes a tool of leverage for making it happen faster and better.
That's wonderful, and I totally agree. And in high school or secondary years, there, you know, you've got this, you know, paradigm shift almost with, you know, using some of these building blocks, and now, you know, the kids are older and they're going to be putting some of these things into practice. So what can parents or should parents instill in these teenage years?
One of the things that resonated so much with us as we became familiar with classical education and the idea of the first three of the seven liberal arts, the trivium, grammar, dialectic, and rhetoric, was how they paralleled how children develop at a younger age. And Laurie talked about this a little bit, but at a younger age, they like just drinking up information. Give them more. They want to learn. It doesn't matter what. Make it fun and interesting. They'll learn most anything. And so they're like sponges. They're like empty hard drives waiting to have things loaded on them. But they change. They become argumentative. They become pert. And so we teach them, by teaching them with the grain, according to what they want to learn, we teach them how to argue well. And then as they get older, they care about how they're perceived. And so we teach them how to be articulate and winsome. And along the way, we teach them lots of content in various things. But the thing that resonates so much with us when we were first exposed to the idea of classical education was that it respected the changing nature of a child as they were growing up, as they were maturing. And we have seen it work so well. 25 years ago, we were telling people what could be. Now we look back and we see the tens of thousands of people that we had the joy and pleasure of being able to help. And we mm-hmm. see how much of an impact it has made, and boy, what the kids are doing well beyond the years of their peers because of it is really hard to overstate.
And this is so true. And you know, as I'm listening, I'm thinking back too, to because we have a lot of parallels in our lives where I had, God blessed you with four boys, and he blessed me with boy, girl, boy, girl, boy. I didn't even get two in a row at the same time, you know. And that really stretched our family, you know, in many ways, but it also taught my children some very good skills that I could never have taught them. But one of the things is my children have always been able to share their opinion, and they, being out in the world a little bit and come back, you know, they have shared with me some things about, they have said to me, people do not know how to argue. And, you know, it's really true. You should be able to have a conversation with someone who is diametrically opposed to you and be civil without it being this, you know, name-calling, fist-fight kind of a brawl. And so that has been modeled in our home. You know, sometimes my children and I are having discussions, which I'm not liking what I hear, but they're articulating it well. And then I can, you know, explain my point or my, you know, perspective. And it sounds like you've done that with your children as well. And one of the things, you know, as I'm going through our talking points here is that, you know, you mentioned allowing your teen some freedom. And, you know, a lot of parents saying, you know, I can't even let my kid out of my sight. So explain how you can give your kids some freedom, because we've basically done the same thing here in our parallel universe. Which, by the way, you have given us some training and didn't even know we were out here. So it's like 10,001 now, the Gerwitz family. So, you know, what are some things that you have done in that regard?
Well, let me just step back a second to something that you said about teaching children how to argue well. One of the things that we've looked at in the classical education world is, how do we teach rhetoric? And most of it has been teaching about rhetoric. And so we see students learning the five canons of rhetoric that Aristotle wrote about. And we see these kinds of things. And so people learn about rhetoric and can tell us what Aristotle said about rhetoric, but what they're not doing is learning to be effective rhetoricians. They're not learning to be effective communicators. And that's been very disturbing for us. And so we've been playing with this idea for a long time. And it has finally come to fruition in one of our current projects, which is our rhetoric textbook. As we talk now, we're in late 2017, and it's about ready to be released in 2018. It'll be released in 2018. And it really does answer the question of how we argue in a way that is respectful and honoring to others with whom we might differ. It's being titled A Rhetoric of Love, and as you can imagine, it's going to be very different than just looking at what's been typical. But back to your question of how to give children freedom and know that they're okay, will be okay with it, it's a matter of that being a motivational process that is balancing what I would call freedom and responsibility. And frankly, the parent has to go first, because the parent is the one leading the charge. And so, first of all, instilling in our children self-discipline is part of the learning process. And as we do that and they show that they're accepting the responsibility of that discipline, we give them more freedom. And we motivate them that way. And when they see that motivation, they heed that and they show more responsibility, we give them more freedom. The one thing we have to realize in all of this is the raising of children is not an indefinite responsibility nor an indefinite opportunity. It is basically 18 years and you're done. And when you're done,
right,
you don't have a chance to do it again. It's once and done per child. And we want to see them handle that responsibility and freedom very well. And so, you know, when they're 18, if they have been completely dominated and controlled by us, and then they're completely free, they're not likely to do well with that. And so the idea of gradually reducing them, reducing the restrictions that we have on them is a natural thing to do. And when it's motivated by handling it well, it gives you more. We've seen great success with that.
And then I think the really neat thing to me is to watch our sons, who are now grown, all of them grown men. All one of our sons works in at Veritas Press in the family business, but the rest all have their own companies. And the exciting thing to me is to see them constantly call their dad, asking them questions like, "What do you think about this?" I mean, just yesterday, our youngest son called my husband with what, you know, many people would consider an ethical question. And it was not something that was black and white. In fact, it was far from it. But because they'd had those kinds of conversations and because they were given freedom when they were younger to explore things, now they've developed that relationship where they want to talk and they want us to be part of their lives, even in their 30s.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And that's so, so great. And it's important. It's encouraging to me to have you guys on. And, of course, we are out of time. But I have loved getting to hear your heart and your, you know, your vision for homeschoolers, young homeschoolers, and the opportunities, you know, with this new app you guys have, as well as curriculum. And I'm laughing to myself here, but I will share. My kids say I never stop homeschooling them even when they're done with homeschooling. So I think I need to get like an advanced copy of the book that you have coming out, because that's going to be perfect for my kids, especially the two that are currently in college. You know, it's going to be another great opportunity for them to be able to articulate and practice. I'm interested to see what you have in there. So listeners, go to veritaspress.com for more information. And any last words that you would like to leave with the listeners?
Well, we appreciate the work that you're doing, and we appreciate the fact that there is a movement out there that's parents taking responsibility directly and completely for the education of their children. This was not the way things were when I was growing up. My parents didn't think that way, and they were Christian parents. But It is our responsibility as parents to inculcate and educate our children. We get help from other people. But we don't give up the responsibility.
Absolutely love that. And friends, please visit Veritas Press. You will enjoy what you see there. You can find the show notes, everything that we've discussed today, on vintagehomeschoolmoms.com. Look for the podcast, Raising Successful Children.
We're happy to have people come and visit our website, as you mentioned, at veritaspress.com. But we also have a toll-free number, 1-800-922-5082, and we are here to help you organize your homeschool and give you direction, give you ideas and plan. We have very well-trained people in our service department, and that's what we're here for. That's why we exist.
Thank you both, Marlon and Lori, for being our guests today.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Visit Felice at MediaAngels.com and TheVintageHomeschoolMoms.com. Vintage Homeschool Moms is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.